Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.
We're joined again here by Lauren Conlon, who is tracking closely the Grant Solomon story. And actually, even though last time I introduced her as being from Tennessee, she's not, but she went to Tennessee recently. Lauren, thanks for coming back.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and allowing me to use your platform to do a part two of this investigation, which is so important. Yes, guys, I went to Tennessee for the first time ever. So I started in Franklin, I ended up in Gallatin, and then the last leg of my trip was Nashville. So, you know, it was definitely bittersweet, I guess. It's obviously not a scary place. I've just been in my own head a lot with this. And again, I'm very editorial, so I do offer my opinions a lot, and it's no secret what I think. I don't know if you're going to ask me something there, but yeah.
That's what we've gathered about you and your work. And I know that we are often careful about not only not making people angry, but about legal issues and that kind of thing. So I totally get your reservations. And that is unfortunate, especially since you already had the trip planned.
Yeah, no, but it was fine. It was fine. You know, and everything you're saying is correct. You know, from a legal standpoint, I mean, I have disclaimers all over my podcast with this is my style. This is what it is. But you should do your own research. And I do respect that about you guys as well. But anyway, so I got there, and on the way to Franklin, you know, and Franklin itself, it's beautiful. It is, I think it's about 50,000 people.
Yeah.
And I mean, I feel like the median price of these houses have to be $2 to $3 million. It's kind of crazy. It's gorgeous. And, you know, we drove by Chris Stapleton's house and they're like, oh, that's, you know, Tim McGraw's house. There's just a lot of different celebrities that live there. And, we were by Justin Timberlake's house. I couldn't believe
it's insane.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was crazy. So, you know, I would say every 2 to 3 miles, there was a different Baptist church. Mm-hmm. And these churches, the names of these churches were familiar to me, not for any other reason than I had uncovered some kind of scandal that happened there. So I did kind of get this icky feeling, so to speak, just because I obviously know that's not the case for every church, for every person, but a lot of this stuff is so scary because these scary people are hiding behind the pulpits and the pews and behind being a pastor or, you know, a youth pastor. And, you know, where I live in New York City, it's kind of like the bad guy, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
I'm scared of this thief, this criminal, because he puts himself out there like this, where these guys, you know, they're not so easy to spot. So I did sort of get like a weird feeling, I guess. But anyway, I ended up meeting Angie and Gracie, and it was so wonderful to meet them. I mean, they are just, guys, they're amazing women. And Gracie, I gotta tell you, the strength coming from a 16-year-old and how she is just so tough and just kind of wants to be involved in what's going on, because, you know, this is her life. It was really incredible to see firsthand. We also met a journalist from the Luna Shark team, which I'm sure you guys know they're covering this as sort of their second big story after the Murdoch murders, which is huge.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, her name was Beth Braden. Her is Beth Braden, and she's fantastic. And so she sat with Angie and Gracie and I. We all had lunch, and then we sat with another guy named George, who's been helping out with the investigation because he went to GCA, Grace Christian Academy. He knows so much about what went on there behind closed doors, and he's just been such an asset. So I also pulled in two experts. You know, that came in and traveled from two different states.
Great.
So yeah. So all of us kind of sat down and we came up with a plan. We came up with a team, and essentially, you know, we just need investors to fund this investigation. You know, and it's it's going. I have to say it's very exciting because things are now going. We have all the positions in place ready to go. We just, you know, it's the whole money thing. So,
can you talk a little bit about that plan? Any of that you can share, and some of it you may not be ready to yet.
Yeah, no, it's tough. What can I share? I mean, I guess what I can share is that the people that are on this team, there are no doubts in my mind that they will bust this wide open.
Awesome.
So that is the one thing I can say. And, you know, we met in Franklin for a few hours on Saturday, and then Sunday we visited the scene of the accident in Gallatin. And, you know, they listened and they took notes, and they really, you know, seemed to nod their heads a lot and say, wow. Okay. But I really feel like it wasn't until they went to the scene of the accident in Gallatin that they really were like, oh my gosh, this did not happen the way people said it happened. So, and that was the same for me too. That was a turning point for me. I mean, I always knew that something was very off, very foul, and something felt covered up. But I really recommend, if anybody's really interested in this case and you have any doubts in your mind whatsoever, please go to Gallatin and see the parking lot of WPI and pull up the pictures of Grant's accident, because your mind's going to be blown, guys.
Yeah,
it's going to be blown.
I know on the episode that after you visited of your corruption podcast, you talked about how, like, you were in awe of it. Definitely didn't happen that way, which I think your opinion was probably pretty strong before then. So was it immediate on walking in the scene? What was it about the scene that went from this didn't happen to there's no chance in hell this happened?
Yeah. So I think for me initially, it was just like, hello, you just read the reports about his body and someone saying that he was dragged across a parking lot 60 to 75 feet. You're just like, what? Obviously, that didn't happen like that. Absolutely not. I think the main thing for me, which was huge, is the ditch itself. And I didn't have a tape measure, unfortunately, but the ditch itself was very deep. So if a car rolled backwards in this ditch, a truck, and because the incline, the parking lot incline was so steep, but I didn't realize that either. I was like, wow, this is really on an incline. So yeah. The parking lot incline was so steep. And if you go back to one of my episodes, I do have degrees, angle mm-hmm. degrees and stuff like that. And in one of the show notes, but I don't know off the top of my head, but anyway, I mean, if a truck was going to roll backwards, guys, not only would it just hit the ditch, the bottom of the ditch, and stop, if it didn't stop, it would have flipped yeah. at the rate that it should have been going. So that was crazy, because if you look at the pictures, the car wasn't stuck, the bottom of the car. It actually appears to be up on a sidewalk, which is insane, because it's like, boom, the bottom of the ditch. And then, you know, it kind of slopes back upwards again onto the sidewalk. And there you go. There's the car. That makes no sense.
And physically, there's pretty big rocks in the bottom of that ditch too, which in my mind would have prevented it. Well, I think physically it's impossible for it to have done what it did. But if it was going to keep going, I think it hit those rocks and it stopped. But if you just look at the picture, for me, it looks impossible for everything to have happened. So I would like to go just see it myself, walk that hill, because yeah. I was talking to my stepdad today and telling him about the case. And, mm-hmm. and I mean, we're rednecks. We own trucks and we've never, like, if you put it in neutral, it rolls backwards immediately. And if you're parked on a hill and you have it in drive, it's either going to stay there or roll backwards. So for him to have said that he got out of the car, walked around it, that's just complete bull crap. Cause mm-hmm. physically that is impossible.
I think the pictures make it look as if the truck came off the highway or came off of the road. It looks more right. like it came from that direction than from the parking lot.
You're 100% correct in that assumption. It doesn't make sense. So people who look at this picture, they're like, wait, it rolled how? And now it's backwards on the sidewalk and the highway. You're right. No sense. And going back to what you said about, you know, and I said this too, I was like, yeah, the truck is not going to wait for anybody to get out and get their stuff and then decide it's going to roll. But let's say that the truck did malfunction and, you know, it moved itself, you know, out of park and it rolled over Grant. Well, guys, Aaron Solomon drove that truck for over a month. Okay. Mm-hmm. Just keep that in your mind right now. Would you ever drive a malfunctioned truck that killed your only son a month before? I wouldn't.
I can't comprehend that emotionally or logically of this vehicle. If it indeed does not stay in park, I don't want to be anywhere in it.
Yeah. Exactly. So I don't even know if I did a good enough job sort of describing that ditch to everybody, but that was, I mean, we all said there should have been an accident recon because they would have seen it would have flipped over. Yep. It would have gone so fast. It would have flipped over. And I think I said this in the last episode and I felt super guilty, but it just really showed me that if it happened the way he said it happened, Grant would have been, you know, hamburger meat. Yeah. He wouldn't have been in perfect condition.
Yeah. And that's,
I know that
even if the truck malfunctioned and drug him, it doesn't make sense to me that his body was almost perfect other than mark on his head. So
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And at one point I said, Angie, you know, what was he wearing? I don't know much about sports, but I do know that baseball pants are designed to protect your legs from, you know, sliding and this and that. And she's like, oh no, he was in like basketball shorts. He didn't change yet. He didn't, you know, nothing like that. So one other thing I did notice as well was when you're standing at the top of the parking lot or the hill where Aaron Solomon was, when he made the 911 call, there is a point that he calls out to Grant and says, can you turn your head? Well, it sounds like he's kind of barely yelling. It sounds like he's right there. Guys, you can't hear anything. I mean, you truly cannot hear anything from where you are. Even if there are no cars going along the highway, it's still very difficult to hear, which this is obviously a speculation and an assumption. And this is my assumption. So take it for what you will. But it felt like that was a little bit fake, a little bit forced, only because there's no way he could have heard him unless he walked down to where he was and actually, you know, got in his face and said, Grant, but we all know he didn't do that.
And I know the truck rolled allegedly 60 feet. How far was Aaron away when he was on the phone? Was he up by his car or was he a little bit closer?
I believe he was up by his car. Okay. I mean,
so around 60 feet away.
Yes. Around 60 feet away. Exactly. That's uphill. Exactly.
Uphill. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was pretty intense and it was pretty jarring for all of us. I really had to take a minute. And, you know, I actually took the time, you guys, to sit in the ditch on the rocks. And, you know, I placed myself, I'm not really an outdoorsy type of girl. So I placed myself gently on the rocks and I kind of carefully sat backwards and it hurt really badly. And I could, you know, I could feel myself getting scratched and scraped and just kind of torn up just by laying there. So I'm just scratching my head. Like, how did he get dragged into these? And a truck is just sitting over him. I mean, and the position of the wheels as well. Yeah. If it actually rolled backwards, the wheels wouldn't have been on a diagonal. So, there's so many things.
So, and the video, I know you posted it on TikTok. Did you put it anywhere else of you in the parking lot?
No, I didn't put it anywhere else yet. I put it on TikTok and I think I put the audio, part of the audio, in the last episode.
So, the reason I'm mentioning that, if people have any question about the parking lot itself, it's every grocery store parking lot you've ever been in. It's broken blacktop. It's like, it's, if you fall, you're going to scrape your knee. You're not going to be dragged. Yeah, I encourage people, and we'll repost it on our social media, but watch the video. This is, no way the body would have been in that kind of condition.
Well, we also got to see Grant's truck, which was in storage,
which is huge. I had heard somewhere, I don't know where, that the truck was actually destroyed or that it was put somewhere, but it's still in shape.
It is. Yeah. It is. And, you know, we got to see it and I think a lot of us were shocked at how much space there was underneath the truck from, you know, the top of the undercarriage to the bottom of the ground. And, you know, that made us question two things, like how stuck was he? And the second thing, he was pretty slim. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that this truck dragged him when there was so much space underneath it. You almost thought like, well, he kind of could have, you know, just gotten rolled over, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It was very, very surreal. And, you know, we also visited Grant's gravesite that his mom and his sister go to every Friday to put fresh flowers there. And I mean, guys, I lost it. Like, yeah. I never met this kid, but they have his picture from when he's like 4 or 5 to him, his senior picture to him playing sports. And just as a parent, it ripped at me. It truly did, because it just really makes you think that, you know, this boy deserved better. He really, truly deserved better.
I know you had spoken to Angie quite a bit. And my wife's name is Angie, and I have a daughter named Gracie. So I think about that every time we cover this.
Are you serious?
I do. So every time I think about this case, that runs back through my mind.
You are kidding. No. I just got chills. That is so crazy.
So I've internalized this probably a little more than I should have. Having said that, you've talked to Angie quite a bit. And what were the emotions like of getting to meet her, but then being at the gravesite? Just had to be such an overwhelming experience.
It was. And I think that a lot of people, they can't really wrap their head around, I guess, why I'm doing this, so to speak, if, you know, I have other jobs and whatever. And it's because I didn't expect to do this. I did develop this relationship with Angie, early on. And, you know, I respected her in the sense that she was very forthcoming with documentation, because clearly I do have to be objective with, mm-hmm. with most everything, you know, when it comes to the courts and the, you know, whatever, you guys get it.
Yeah.
She was so forthcoming with all of this information. You know, and I even said to her, I was like, we got to get everything out on the table right now, because, you know, things will come out like they always do. And mm-hmm. she's like, absolutely. And she was so forthcoming with everything, every text, every message. I mean, it was just really refreshing, because it just showed that she didn't care, you know, how she looked at a certain point in her life, with being completely just down and out, you know, having her kids taken from her and having, you know, this scarlet letter on her. She just, you know, she told me everything, she shared everything. And I was in awe of her for that. Truly. I was, and her strength in general. And I know this is not probably the platform for it, but I guess I respect her as a Christian woman too, because mm-hmm. I've asked her a few times, like, are you mad at God? Are you? And she always says, God is faithful. God is faithful. And I think that is just so telling at the kind of person that she is. You know what I mean?
And I
she really is the real deal.
Yeah. You mentioned that on your episode as well. And we're open about our faith on our podcast, and we try to remain objective otherwise. But yeah, the more we talk about it being like a church is, and even a church school, a school sponsored by a church, it's tough to I don't know, process that for me, because we live in a similar town, I think, to Gallatin, not Franklin. We're not millionaires, but and just thinking about the local schools and churches around here, and I don't know, just like I said, it's hitting home quite a bit. And as far as our faith goes, it's hard.
Yeah, I'm a Christian too, and when I heard you mention that you just took time to sit on the rocks, I pictured what I would do, and perhaps you did, but you know, mm-hmm. I've been praying for Angie and Grace. I've been praying that we would find, if there's more to this story, that it comes to the light. And a Bible verse, for whatever reason, just has stuck with me on this, and it is Isaiah chapter 1:17, learn to do good, seek justice, and correct oppression. And that's what we're called to do. And I think I texted Angie too. I was like, I want justice for Grant, because at the end of the day, there was no investigation. There was not justice to have been sought for this kid. And by golly, that's what, if we can use our voice to do that, if we can, you know, point people towards your financial like if we can put all of our financial resources together into your channel and work as a team, we're seeking justice, and that's what we want to do.
Yeah. And that is so amazing. And I know she appreciates it so much. And now I do as well. You know, it's like, I'm in this, and I told her, I was like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to see this through. And it really is. It's been incredible to watch different people reach out and want to help. That does make me believe that people are still good, even though there is pure evil in this world at the hands of other humans, unfortunately. But it really has made me just, I guess, feel happy in that sense. And I also, I get a lot of emails from people with other stories of cover-ups and corruption in Tennessee. And they've said, like, you know, this is great. You gave me this idea and now I'm going to do this. And so, you know, like, keep it coming. And that really just makes us want to keep going. So I will say I am going to be discussing this in this week's episode, but I did learn and experience something firsthand being in Tennessee for 2 days. I curse in real life, but I don't really like cursing on the air, I guess, but I am going to just say it really quickly because it is fuckery there, guys. It is these old white men and these games they're playing. It is so bizarre. That's the only word I can use for it. And I'll get into it this week on my podcast, but I somehow found myself right in the middle of something so bizarre that I was just like, I couldn't get my head around it, how I found my way in the middle of something. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you've been dealing with this stuff for 10 years. And she's like, yeah. And it's truly crazy because, you know, Angie and Gracie, they try to live the most normal lives they could with also, you know, having fear in the back of their heads 24/7. And Angie, like, you know, I wanted to go to dinner and I was like, let's do this. And I'm like, where should we go? And she's like, oh, I don't really know. I don't go out a lot. And she doesn't go out. This has truly taken so much from her and so much out of her that she does feel beaten down. And she doesn't feel, you know, that she is able to go out and live her life. And that just, it breaks me. It really, truly does. But I witnessed a lot of what she goes through on a regular basis. And I'll tell you guys, I was like, this is enough for me. Get me out of Tennessee. Sure. Like, see you later.
By nature, I am a fixer. Like, if there's a problem, I don't want to hee-hum around. I want to get it done and fix it. What can we do to get this getting more momentum? Like, as far as, I mean, I think there's a lot of a momentum about people talking about it, but how can the case be opened back up? What are we going to have to do to fix this?
Well, you know, I hate saying it goes back to money because it feels weird and it doesn't feel genuine, but truly it does boil down to money with the investigation. And I believe we have a goal of $250,000, all in. And I think that something that seems to help other cases is when, you know, a celebrity or a public figure kind of is at the helm or at the forefront and saying, wow, this doesn't make sense. Can you please donate? I do think that helps, but again, it feels strange. It feels genuine, or it doesn't feel genuine. I'm sorry, but I would say, like, keep spreading the word until it does hit somebody like, let's say, a Nancy Grace, or it does hit somebody's desk, like, you know, Dan Abrams or Ashley Banfield. I think that the more people that see this, the more people they know, and that, you know, we can spread the word, and it will be great to put the change.org petition in the notes as well as the GoFundMe. And everything you guys are doing is truly wonderful. So thank you.
And for anybody who thinks, wow, that's a big number. When you talk about investigators, you talk about travel, you talk about testing, you talk about, like retrieving the body, like, it stacks up so fast. And I'm sure that's even it's a great goal to have, but it may not cover everything even with that. No, yeah.
That's the start. Nailed it. That's the start. I mean, between legal fees, and we're working on a very, we've got our sights set on this very, very high powered attorney that we've had multiple calls with, which is, it's great. But nothing is set in stone yet. So you nailed it. Between all of the legal fees, the exhumation, the testing, the forensics, the security, it's a lot, but, I have no doubt that we will get there.
Yeah. And I'm kind of with you. Asking for money is always weird. And it's not like the money is going to, like, just pay people to cover it. Like, this is to help this family. So that's where the money's going. So I hope our listeners will appreciate that and to sign the petition too.
Yes. The petition is great. I think we have over 300,000 signatures, which also speaks volumes. If you can sign it. I mean, everything helps. So I really do appreciate you guys taking the time out to allow me to do these updates. And one other thing I want to add that I said to you guys on the last podcast, it was about the position of the cars, Aaron and Grant's car, when they They pulled into the parking lot, caught the attention of one of the employees. I always found that to be important. I really did. And now after seeing the parking lot, I'm not so sure. I find that to be super important. Because everything else just kind of wiped it out.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. You know, I'm kind of like, eh, everything else is so insane that that doesn't matter.
And in your video, like, you can see vehicles in the background and it seems obvious how people should park if they're pulling up to the facility. So I was trying to, in my mind, like, how were they parked and where and how did, like, it goes back to the angle of the tires and all that. Like, that would, that's why we need a reconstruction.
Exactly. And and I'll also add that I did lay down in the ditch. And if you are to the side, to either side, you can't see anything. So maybe cars that drove by, I would almost bet you anything. All they really noticed was a car kind of sticking out backwards. And it probably looked weird, but not weird enough for them to stop. So anyone who might have been wondering why didn't anyone stop and pull over? This is on a busy highway. Well, you can't see anything. You truly can't see anything in that ditch. So that is why.
And from that angle, it absolutely has to look like somebody just drove off the road into the ditch. So, which may be, you know, a normal thing in that area. I don't know. I know a lot about Ohio drivers, but not Tennessee drivers, John.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what to say. Like, it really baffles me how you can, I mean, you don't have to be an expert to see logically, this makes zero sense. And everything about this case, like it, I can't imagine, you know, you've talked about what it's taken out of Angie and Gracie. I can't imagine that being my child and nothing happening when it seems to make the most sense that obviously something happened here.
You just got to scream, somebody do something. That, this has got to be the inner voice, right?
I can't imagine what it feels like, one, to have lost your son, but two, that no one in your town cares enough to tell you the truth. To consider the truth.
That's a good point. Is there a network of support there for Angie and Gracie? I know you people are reaching out as the media coverage goes, but locally, do they have that?
Yeah, there are a group of, I would say, local women who do offer their support to Angie, and they are lovely people, absolutely lovely. But, you know, I think that there is a larger picture here, guys, for many people looking into this case. If, you know, I've mentioned a lot of names that have been involved indirectly, and there's a lot of people in power that a lot of people don't want to see in power. And so I do think that the network of support, it's Grant and Gracie, but it's also beyond that. They want to see justice for everybody who's experienced, you know, something that's not right due to some of these people in power, people in the church, people in the schools, you know, people in the government. So I do think she has a group of support, but I think sometimes Angie prefers to focus on Grant and Gracie. And I think that's sort of where, you know, she wants to keep her head and keep her head down for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's only natural for other people to be like, yes, obviously get some, you know, justice for Grant and Gracie, but hello, while you're at it, we got to take down these people as well. So I am in agreement with them 100%, but I am also focused on Grant and Gracie as well. So, and I guess I'm under the impression, and I firmly believe that once we figure out what really happened with Grant, all of the other stuff involving some of these people will fall into place. Yeah. I really do.
It's going to be the first domino that falls.
You nailed it. I that's what I truly believe, because, you know, all we got to do is uncover Grant's story. Everything will fall into place. I truly believe that. And I do, I pray for that every night, because there are so many layers of this onion. If you listen to the Corruption podcast, and it's been a doozy.
I got a couple more questions. One, is there any kind of social media? Are there social media pages for Grant's case for people to show their support there, follow along, and to share? Because that's where people get most of their information.
Yes, absolutely. So there is a Freedom for Gracie website, which is all about Brent as well. So everything is really under Freedom for Gracie, and that's Freedom for Gracie with an IE. And that's also the social media handle. And there's also a Facebook page. So you can find anything and everything there. Angie is also pretty active on Twitter as well. I think her handle is like, I don't know. I'll have to find it for you guys, and I can send it to you. But it's like Dr. AHS or something like that. But yeah, she's active on that as well. So yeah, definitely check out those pages. There's a timeline of Grant and his story, and then a timeline of Gracie and her story. So it's very helpful.
So my other thought was more going back to your comments about it being systematic and not like, yes, this issue is important, let's fix it, but there are not bigger issues than somebody losing their life necessarily, but wider issues at play here. And it reminded me of another case we covered in Tennessee of, have you ever heard the name Georgia Tan before? She ran adoption services in Tennessee and essentially stole and sold like 8,000 babies back in the 30s and 40s. So, and she did that because she wanted to. She had connections with certain judges. She had connections with certain police officers that would let her know when kids were in danger of being removed. So the systematic piece really does, in almost every case we found that ends up being fumbled in some way or not executed in the right way, it's usually that systematic piece. So I'm hoping, and like you, praying that we figure out what's going on in Gallatin and that surrounding area. Or it happened in Gallatin. Do they live in Gallatin? Okay.
No, they live in Franklin. Okay. Yeah. Gosh, I don't want to be rude about Gallatin, but man, I also ran out of that place. So I was like, where am I? I feel like, no, guys, my mom is from the South. She's from North Carolina. Okay. I always like, I crap all over my cousins. And so I feel like I have the right to do that. But
fair enough.
We walked into a diner and it was like out of a movie. It was like everybody turned their heads and they're just like, I was like, sorry.
Is that just because I remember you mentioning that? Is that because they knew Angie and what was going on? Is that because you all just weren't regulars?
I think that's what it was. We just weren't regulars.
You ain't from around here.
This was such a specific diner that it was like, you could tell it was almost like somebody's kitchen or something. Yeah. So they just weren't expecting, you know, strangers. And I'm sure I was in all black as usual. And so they're probably like, what? You know, yeah.
New York City.
Is there
a sense, I wonder if any of those people entangled in that web are feeling the pressure of all the attention that this case seems to be getting on social media and through your platform and others. Do they feel that? I mean, is something going to break before Grant's?
Is anybody sweating yet?
Yeah.
I wish I knew. I mean, I have to think that a lot of them must have eyes or ears on everything that's going on. And with the Luna Shark team doing this, I mean, that in itself, like, you know, I'm just little old me, me, myself and I, but they are beasts, right? Like, I feel like they should be sweating, knowing that Luna Shark is on the case. I also, you know, we really did say, oh man, they must be scared. And then honestly, like the next day, I think some source sent Angie and I a picture of Aaron Solomon at a bar buying people drinks before a concert that he was going to. And so, you know, Angie's like, yeah, I guess he's not sweating that much. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe not, but you never know what's going on behind closed doors. Maybe he is, but I guess from the outside looking in, it doesn't seem like anybody's sweating.
The Luna Shark piece, I know there's a lot of production that goes into that. Do you have a timeline for when maybe they're going to start actually releasing things or putting stuff together?
Yeah, I mean, they've already done two episodes.
Okay, great. So, awesome.
Yeah, their style, like they're very, like they are like, I'm trying to think of another podcast, but basically they want to get their own documents. So they press documents through FOIA themselves. So like, whereas I'm like, all right, give me everything you have. If I'm missing something, I'll request it. They just want to request everything. Yeah. So their process is a bit longer because it is a bit more thorough.
Right.
Whereas mine is like, you know, here we go. This is what I got. And this is what you guys are going to get. So listen up. But again, it's worked for us or for me so far. And like I said, I'm hoping to be able to, when we do have the investigation underway, we'll be able to share certain things, but obviously not everything, just because we don't want to compromise anything. But no, I'm feeling so hopeful about this, you guys. So definitely good vibes and prayers for sure.
Awesome. Well, we appreciate you coming back on to share those updates, and we're happy to make this as a regular thing as much as it needs to be, but to help spread the word and let people know what they can be doing. But thank you for putting your time into this and energy, and going to Tennessee sounds like a big deal for you. So
it was a big deal. It was. And thank you so much for saying all of those kind things.
Yeah. Yep. Well, we'll see you again soon. Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, guys.
You've listened to True Crime Cast, distributed by Stoveleg Media. Check out Stoveleg.com to find out more about your hosts and to find other podcasts to listen to. Stoveleg Media, igniting conversation.